Hello and welcome back to the Nowhere Office, wherever you are, with me, Julia Hobsbawm.
And me, Stefan Stern.
This is the podcast which looks at the world of work as it is, as it could be, should be, might be, with some of the leading thinkers and doers of the day. Hello, here we are again, the Nowhere Office. Nice to have your company again.
Yes, Julia, and you've been to New York City, taking the Nowhere Office on the road out to our people in the world. How was it there?
Oh, well, it was great. I love New York. It's like a jolt of caffeine every time I go. And as we will hear, I had quite a jolt of caffeine while I was there. But I also went to upstate New York, Stefan, and I had the slightly weird experience of seeing my friend's vintage Nowhere Office, a Louis Vuitton case from the 20s worth a small fortune called The Secretary, which really reminded me that people have been experimenting with their travelling desk for quite a long time. It was great, full of ideas, full of enthusiasm. And as usual, the Americans are pretty far ahead of everyone else.
Well, as Q would say, good to have you back, 007, get the podcast duo back up and running again. But although we are back in London, in fact, we're going back now in this episode to New York to listen to Julia's office tour. Now, you know, you may remember from an earlier episode, she had a tour of the Prospect Trade Union, their new offices in London. But this time it was the not so much a hard hat tour as a soft carpet guided tour of the brand new refurbed Park Avenue offices of Savills, US. Now, Park Avenue gets you thinking of the opening titles of North by Northwest and Cary Grant, but here they are. Manhattan is still there, alive and kicking. And the Savills in the US, of course, the giant corporate real estate consultants. And Julia's guide was Gabe Moranz, his vice chairman, and the man who represents, let me get the text right, occupiers with workplace strategy, space evaluation, and lease portfolio optimization.
Welcome to our office. Really proud of what we've been able to do, you know, as a real estate firm. Oftentimes, I think you have to think of your space as a showroom. And our lease was expiring in 2020. Here in this building, we ended up renewing for an additional 10 years. And as part of that commitment, we renovated the space almost entirely. And what was interesting about it is we moved back into the space in the middle of the pandemic. And so when they designed the space, they incorporated some lessons that they already saw emerging during the pandemic, which was a really interesting bet that management made and really fortuitous because we are now benefiting from the space. And so as I walk through, I'll point out
what those changes were.
Exactly. And so in terms of just a reception, you know, they made it more informal. We see a lot of companies that forego receptions. We used to have a desk that faced the entryway when you came off the elevator bank.
And like a firewall, you
like
know,
a firewall.
Halt, don't come in.
Exactly. With the power dynamics that come with being directly behind a desk facing the door. And I think you've seen this shift in hospitality in hotels where they've shrunk and moved the concierge desk to the side. And that's what they've done here.
And there's lots of leafy greenness behind the desk. So there's a whole hydroponic plant movement, isn't there?
It's green spaces. I think it's the color of the pandemic, because many spaces we've seen develop and be built over the pandemic have incorporated a lot of greenery. It sounds silly because we didn't have greenery before, but the space really feels more alive. It feels healthier. There are plants in all of the conference rooms and offices.
And it's sort of hard flooring, obviously marble, but it's definitely softened by all the green, isn't it? And we're 11 floors up at 399 Park Avenue. So, you know, there's quite a lot of corporateness to get through before you walk in the building.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this is a mixed building in terms of tenancy. Historically, a lot of financial service firms, a lot of consulting firms, which is pretty much what ultimately Savills is, where we're a real estate specific consulting firm. But yes, you come up to the space and it gets softened. And I've seen several of the other builds in this building, and they all mostly reflect a more modern aesthetic.
So show me the offices.
Well,
I mean, this is the sort of pre-office, isn't it?
This is the pre-office. And so as we turn towards the east, walking down the 60,000 square foot floor.
Oh, look at that, Huddle Room A, but it's digitally signed. There's a whole trend, isn't there, that has carried on through the pandemic of of slightly ironic names for meeting rooms.
We call them huddle rooms and we call them conference rooms. And as part of our renovation, we actually installed all of these reservable, and you could see this line moving forward is unreservable desks because we're committed mostly to an open plan.
Oh, okay. This is sort of like a hot desk booth.
That's correct. And you could see the sound attenuation materials that are attached to the walls with the felt as well as the hung ceiling. And when you step inside, you can get a sense of the difference in sound quality.
Oh, okay. Actually, look at that. We're now, I'm looking at sort of beautiful, rather grey felt. So it's the whole ergonomics of noise are being addressed.
Correct, because you have these small little rooms that are one after the next, and they're sharing ductwork, as is typical, and so you have to institute some elements to make it a little bit more private.
And what are the metrics, Gabe? What's the take-up of these rooms? If I worked here, I'd shoot in pretty quickly every morning and grab one.
It's not uncommon that we see that, although frequently you see these used by guests who come here for the day, often from other offices around the globe, but they are heavily used by the folks who are headquartered here and based here. What we just passed back there is our Genius Bar. If you've ever been to the Apple Store, that's what it was modeled off of, staffed by some of our IT specialists, and really such a fantastic service. You just walk up there and they take care of you, white glove service.
That's hilariously wonderful, actually, because while I was here in Manhattan, a friend of mine, I overheard him for over an hour doing battle with a totally remote tech company for his law firm, a gazillion miles away, with issuing tickets and emails and has it. That's all you want, isn't it? To walk up to an actual person and give them your problem.
Exactly. I want someone to tell me in person that I should just try turning off my computer and starting it up again.
Oh, now we're in a very beautiful, sort of enormous, lofty kitchen, aren't we?
You
look very proud. You started to smile like you're a proud dad.
How could you not be? This I think, is the showpiece of the
great
floor. And what you're standing in is what we call, across North America, each of our offices have what we call the happy room, which is really just a large gathering area, a pantry, not an operable kitchen, but we have nitro coffee on tap.
Nitro coffee?
Hello. Oh, Julia, if you haven't tried nitro coffee, you're about to get a little jittery.
This program returns again and again subconsciously to coffee. I'm about to have a nitro coffee, but for the benefit of our listeners, what is it?
It is coffee that is infused with, I believe, nitrogen. And so there's a bit of a creaminess that's not really carbonated. And for whatever reason, it does the trick of two coffees.
Well, you've done the trick of you've put me in the happy room, and I'm already happy at the prospect of what we're about to experience. We're going to take a break and return once I've had my nitro coffee. So back from the happy room, how do I feel after my nitro coffee? Pretty good. I'm probably holding it together, Gabe, because I'm interviewing you, but I feel very awake, which is very good. What I'd like to return to is how many of these really top-notch, self-contained, soundproofed offices have you got on this floor? What am I looking at? 15?
Yeah, we're seeing about 15 right here on this run. And I'll point out as we go around that we also have booths that are also sound attenuated, where you could sit in the booth and almost not be heard outside the booth. Some pretty cool design features. But what we're looking at here are 15 sound attenuated rooms, some reservable, and of course some not.
Now we're coming up to a sort of slightly cubicle area. I mean, posh cubicle, but cubicle. What's that about? Who gets to work here?
So this is pretty indicative of most of the practice parts of the floor. And so what you're looking at are some perimeter offices with full glass fronts, so the light from the outside can get into the interior. And you also have some interior offices also with glass fronts. And in between, you have two or four workstations with sit-stand desks with dual monitors. And what we're looking at here is both our cross-border team as well as our capital markets team. We've got several different service lines here in Savills, North America, and I could point it out additional teams as we walk through.
So what are you saying? You've sort of designed different desks for different types of jobs?
The desks are all pretty uniform, but there are some customizations. For example, when you have two monitors, you could also go with one monitor, one larger monitor.
The two monitor thing I'm terribly envious of, I have to say. That obviously started in America. It's sort of slightly catching on, you know, as
that culture of abundance.
Yes. The culture of, could I have more, please? Could I have twice? But so the whole office, as I'm understanding it, is designed to both entice and encourage people into work and to make them safe and comfortable when they're in. It's quite sort of cocoon-like atmospherically, isn't it? It's grey and soft and very high-quality wood. When I was at Build Expo, which listeners would have heard in a previous episode, I interviewed a wonderful Taiwanese importer of Japanese wood from ancient temples. So people are quite fetishistic about wood in the office now, aren't they? And wood in buildings, I've noticed.
They are, absolutely. And as part of our redesign of the space, we brightened up all the colors. And so we used to have dark wood. It was a darker carpet. As part of the renovation, we replaced it with a much whiter wood feel, with much grayer, with white tone carpet. The lighting systems are all brand new and different. But as we see, as we look into one of the offices, they were designed with an embrace of the new way of working. And what do I mean by that? Because we are an office-centric culture, because we're oriented around teams and handle a lot of confidential negotiations, what these offices have been designed with is a mini conference area in the offices.
I must say, actually, I'm having a flashback to when I had offices and ran little businesses sort of back in the 90s. And this is the best of that kind of vibe. This is what you might call a corner office, although it's actually fronting Park Avenue, isn't it? It's not on a corner. It's somebody, I'm going to name him, called Doug Jamieson. I have no idea who he is. He's in E11Q11. So that is his ID. But it's a very chic looking office, isn't it?
It's wonderful because you have the desk towards the side and the system is fully sit-stand. Mm-hmm. And so you can raise the desk if you'd like. There's storage, but it's minimal and not overwhelming. We're actually looking out over 53rd Street. So this is a side street.
Oh, okay. That shows me in my geography. We're not even on the park. We're not even on the really big corner offices.
We're on the impressive, but not the really impressive part.
Tell me, Gabe, don't disappoint me. You look out onto Park Avenue, please. Tell me that's true.
I begrudgingly will admit that I look out onto Park Avenue.
But just before we leave, Doug Jamieson in E11Q11. So he has a little sort of little seating area, little mini conference area built into his room. And I presume that's very effective for certain executives.
It's very effective. You have a center table in the corner of the room with four seats, and the other two sides are open, so you can pull up chairs. And so you can effectively, instead of reserving a conference room, because we're constantly meeting and talking with our teams, you can use your office as a conference room. So that alleviates some of the pressure on additional conference rooms. And as we walk past this open area, the Kiyotomo Library, which is named after Kiyotomo, a colleague that unfortunately passed unexpectedly during the pandemic, we actually removed an office, two offices from this area, because we replaced some of those meeting needs with the meeting areas within the offices. And we designed the soft seating area with a little bit of a quieter ambiance. And this is a nice place to come, review documents, not for more boisterous types of meetings.
I mean, of course, the challenge is to sort of, everyone's placing a bit of a bet, really, aren't they, on how this new work will work out. We don't actually know. I think I've told you I'm getting involved in a project called the Hybrid Future, which is actually a longitudinal study for 3 years, because we don't yet know what the lived experience is. Oh my gosh, we've now passed somebody's office. And he's actually called himself Mr. Wonderful, and it's E11Q19. It's a lot messier than Doug's, and it's got four terribly glamorous guitars on the wall. So Mr. Wonderful is a very flamboyant person.
He's got a big personality.
I can totally see that. Wow. So that's really interesting, because what we've just come across in frankly quite a sort of impersonal, muted environment so far is a sort of pop of color, a pop of personality. This bloke isn't even in the room.
Not even in the room. He's.
Do
he's,
tell him that I've noticed his personality is loud.
Oh, I certainly will. He will take that as one of the highest compliments.
That's that's certainly individuality being expressed. And then this guy has got also personalized. I'm not going to name him because he's got a distinctive name. I'm just going to say he's in E11Q20. And he's got a sign on his door that says doing well, and doing well means doing better. NYC is beautiful. So there's a sort of optimism. You're channeling optimism as well, aren't you? Because that's what business is, isn't it?
It is. And if you're going to do business with someone, wouldn't you like them to be upbeat?
Right.
Positive.
Oh, now we're coming up against another sort of little build, which is absolute minimalist, quick in and out pods for calls.
We call these the phone booths. And
well,
if you were to step in, it's a sealed environment with air circulation and electric connected. And these are used very heavily throughout the day for personal calls or for Zoom or interviews for most of the folks who are not sitting in enclosed offices.
And they are also soundproofed. So the whole question of soundproofing, it's not ergonomic, is it? There's a word for it. I'll look it up. But that issue of soundproofing so that there is privacy in a shared space is becoming high priority, isn't it?
It is. There's been this pendulum that swings.
Sorry, we just reached Gabe Moran's office with a wonderful sign on it that says stronger every day. Remember why you started. If your legs get tired, run with your heart. Winners show up. And there's beautiful classical music playing in your office, quite a lot of green, and lots and lots and lots of family photos. And I have to say, quite a large bottle of wine. Now, what's that special bottle of wine about? It's obviously not for drinking in office hours, Gabe.
No, it's that bottle I don't think will ever be drunk. I think too much sun hits it throughout the day and it's been ruined. That was a gift from a client upon closing a deal for them. We were able to navigate.
And were you young and, you know, younger actually, because you're very young now. But I mean, was it the symbolism of that moment where you did it? You did something you didn't think you could do. Your legs got tired.
My legs got tired and I ran with my heart. It was a very challenging process and very nuanced negotiation. And we were able to knock it out of the park for them. And, you know, we do that regularly. But when the client acknowledges it, it's all the sweeter.
I mean, it's a complicated business property, isn't it? Real estate. In fact, it's why I wanted to come and talk to you. And it's particularly useful to come and talk to you in your office. So thank you. Because, I mean, give it to me straight, Gabe. What is actually happening in corporate real estate? You said to me earlier that you are really a management consultancy or a consultancy specializing in real estate. So what is the story of corporate real estate at the moment post-pandemic? Give it to me straight.
We've seen a sea change in a fundamental way in terms of how occupiers of space think about real estate today. It really is fundamentally different than what it was pre-pandemic. And there are some geographic variations in the sense, you know, Asia, for instance, Europe have been much faster to go back to the office than parts of North America. And even within North America, you're talking about differences between, just I'll let you appreciate the view here.
We've just arrived. We are looking just like they do in the movies, through an enormous plate glass window, looking out at, you know, traffic, the headliner being those beautiful little toy, big yellow taxis. It is magnificent. There is, of course, an American flag. I don't think
multiple American flags.
There's actually multiple American flags. There's something about the American flag that works. A flag that appears almost anywhere else in any other context always feels a little bit cheesy and put on. I have to say, whenever I'm in America, I don't feel it's ironic. It's just, it is what Americans do. We're now in a conference room where we have pretty much all the things that make a spectacular corporate office in New York, including, I have to say, some air cons. So if you're hearing the air con, it's there for a reason. You can't have an office in New York without air con, can you? But we've got plants and we're looking down towards the iconic MetLife building. You know, New York Midtown with the skyscrapers, it's so emblematic of the old office era. So Gabe, what's actually changed?
The way companies expect the office to serve their employees has shifted. And that can take the form of several different approaches. I think you saw hints of this certainly over the last 15 years, led by tech with the introduction of the proverbial ping pong table and foosball table, and then going to extremes about having ball pits and rock climbing in offices.
And that was when play and the concept of play at work, which sort of came alongside wellness, defined the design. Is that right?
It's a big part of it, but ultimately, especially for for-profit organizations, there's going to be a revenue component to it. And in this case, it was an epiphany reached by Google that they wanted their employees to stay on campus in the office for as long as possible. And so if you offered services that would allow them not to leave, dry cleaning, a gym, food service, then you increase the productivity of that employee. And components of that were copied all over the place, mostly driven by a desire to attract and retain the right talent and also keep them on premises for as long as possible to increase their productivity. I don't think that mindset exists anymore. The use of the office still functions as a means to attract and retain talent, which is why you've seen this flight to quality across all of North America. So if companies are going to make the decision to invest in their real estate, they want to have either brand new development or they want to have a top tier Class A building. The Class B and C buildings in New York especially, there's a reason why there's so much chatter about residential conversions and why you're seeing increasing number of loans get put in special servicing or on watch lists because they're having trouble attracting the right tenants because tenants are being more prudent in how they choose their office buildings and design the interior of the office space.
And what's that going to do to the Central Business District?
Well, what's unique about New York is we have this interwoven mix of all the different asset classes and real estate, all even on a same block. And so you might have an
Unpick
office.
Unpick that for me, actually. What do you mean? What are the different asset classes?
Hospitality with hotels, residential, office. You don't retail, of course. You don't have industrial, though, in Manhattan. Certainly not below, call it 60th Street. And so what that does is it injects a bit of energy. So even if an office building is underoccupied, you still have residential and retail driving foot traffic. Compare that to a place like Chicago that has a very defined business district, their primary business district. And if people aren't showing up to the offices, then it's quite barren and not a lot of activity. You'd be hard pressed to find that in New York. Perhaps the best example is Lower Manhattan in the financial district.
But then you have a situation, don't you, where, and you've just alluded to this, some buildings become white elephants. It becomes impossible to meaningfully convert them. And that's not just to do with zoning issues, is it? It's not to do with obstructive bureaucracy. It's simply to do with the fact that buildings were built in a certain way for a certain time and purpose. Is that right? Or is it survivable for some buildings? I mean, what is going to happen to those buildings? There's a lot of homeless people.
A lot of homeless people. There was a story in the newspaper today about the growing concern over growing homeless. I mean, we've been steadily, unfortunately, growing in terms of the homeless population nationally since 2016. It's a long problem, and I'm glad that it's getting more attention.
Well, I've certainly noticed that in New York. And I think that some different states and governors have actually been busing people, haven't they, to New York? There's a lot of destitution in New York. But I mean, how realistic is it, Gabe, that, you know, enlightened, you know, philanthropic, socially minded, high-end capitalists like yourself, I mean, how solvable is it for you to group together and say, you know what, this building, that building, that building, these are going to be converted into living quarters for people who don't have anywhere to live?
Well, I think there are several different parts to this. And there's a lot of conversation right now between the real estate community and the political class in order to find a path towards solving that. There are a lot of bureaucratic issues. There are some zoning concerns. For example, in our traditional garment center district, there is an active bill on the table to change zoning to allow for residential as of right. And so I call these zombie buildings, buildings that can attract commercial office tenants. Perhaps the debt cannot be serviced because of the lack of cash flow in the building. And what will happen is the lender will take back the building, then sell the building to a different owner at a lower basis, who will then benefit from the zoning changes, allowing him to build as of right and not have to lobby the city council for a variance, and then introduce lower cost construction because they were able to get the building at a lower basis, add on some tax incentives, and you can build housing to help address the homeless population.
Do you think in a sort of optimist in a pessimist world kind of a way that actually an unintended consequence of the pandemic has been to concentrate the minds of people in the building, construction, real estate industry to the very real social problems all around them, or not? Is it about, I mean, it feels to me a positive move.
It's a very positive move. It's a pure positive move. I think there's an acknowledgement from both sides that there's this very strong need for us to work together. New York has benefited for a long time from very public-private partnerships. And so there's a long history of private citizens who get very involved in helping the city manage things. The most obvious example is the late 70s when New York City almost went bankrupt. A group of corporate titans banded together and helped rescue the city. And so you've always had what they call this shadow class of concerned citizens who work in the sidelines. And that's been going on for a while. It's just seeing the light of day now.
So is it functional what's happening at the moment? You know, it feels that immediately post-pandemic, the attitudes to getting people back to work and back to the office, as I saw it, was pretty dysfunctional. Mm-hmm. Everyone was all over the place, you know, companies being told, you're going back on 1st of March. No, we're not. We're putting that deadline back. Come in 3 days a week. Come in when you like, da, da, da. That was dysfunctional and it's now being evened out, isn't it? Where mm-hmm. a sort of iterative approach is being taken. That's my reading of it, is that the people management side is actually being very innovative. That's why I wanted to come and talk to you, because I think the story is actually moving on to the buildings and the live, work, work to live axis. Do you agree with that? I've never experienced real estate and facilities management being so central in the story of how we live and work before.
It is a epiphany for many people. And I think what summarizes what you just described, Julia, better than anything is that that function has been rebranded as workplace experience.
Huh.
And so at many occupiers, instead of there being a facilities person whose main role was to manage the facilities, you now have workplace experience folks who really don't manage the facilities, but they do manage the people in the facilities. And so they oversee culture and they help oversee real estate. This is not a title that existed even 5 or 6 years ago.
And then they're the people that make the decision on whether you've got Japanese wood being used and...
Yeah, if the CFO signs off on it, yes, definitely.
Right, and whatever that fuel-injected coffee I had was. If you had to give me the three trends that you think are happening around work, property... I mean, you're very, I love your LinkedIn posts, Gabe. We actually met on LinkedIn. That's how we crossed each other's radars. You think a lot about what's happening around work. You pull no punches in your views. Are you typical of the corporate real estate market, or are you what Malcolm Gladwell famously called an outlier? Oh, long silence here while he chooses his words tremendously carefully. Come on, Gabe.
Tremendously carefully. I would say that I would agree that I'm an outlier.
You're not so much an outlier as being outspoken. You are able to articulate these enormous changes. Do you get any pushback from that, from within your industry? Do you get people saying, don't talk so loudly about the no going back phase we're in?
I can proudly say not once, because I really evaluate both sides, and I think it's important that my colleagues in the industry understand that we have experienced a change. And so I'm going to introduce a maybe conflicting statement. The importance of the office has grown, but the use of the office has shrunk. And so I don't think that every company is going to be a 4 to 5 day a week in the office. I think that for many, many companies, the 2 to 3 day in the week mark is going to be sufficient. And that offers employees flexibility, and maybe that goes to 3 to 4 days a week. But there, we have to acknowledge that that has changed, that that has shifted. And yes, there are going to be companies that decide to forego an office. I think that we will realize over the long term that that is not going to work for 99.9% of them.
Well, Gabe Morantz, thank you for having me in your office. In other words, thank you for having the Nowhere office in your office here in Manhattan. Thank you.
You're very welcome, Julia. Thanks for coming.
That sounds fantastic. I better get my CV into them. Let me have a job there. The coffee, fantastic.
The coffee was fantastic. I can't get over the fact that it was administered by a sort of a beer pull. Not being a pub person or a beer drinker, I don't think I've got that language quite right. But, you know, when you go and get a beer in a pub, if that's your thing, sort of draft neutrino coffee. But I thought what really struck me, actually, was the innovation with which people are redesigning office space at the top end of the market and how the corporate office space is going higher and higher in order to attract and retain people. Really extraordinary, rich range of different kinds of offices within the office. Did that strike you?
I think that's where the thinking is going. But I remember my last trip before lockdown was to the European HQ of Steelcase, and they were doing some very interesting work about designs, pods, areas, zones, different moods, non-reflective glass, all sorts of clever things. And the boss there said to me, look, if we want people to do the schlep of the commute and come in a long way, it's going to have to be an attractive place when they finally get here. And so that's where the thinking is going, I think.
Schlep is an appropriate word, listener. It's Yiddish for those who don't speak fluent Jewish. It means exactly what it sounds like, which is the commute is horrible. And yes, office space is being designed to mitigate it. The other thing that I was really struck by, Stefan, is the soundproofing of the booths. That really struck me.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, people have tried to do that with headphones, haven't they, and shut out the world. But a better way of doing it is actual booth where you're clearly just not contactable for a little bit. If you're doing some deep work, trying to do deep work in the office.
Yes, deep work indeed. Well, I had deep work, but I also had a jolly good time.
It's good to hear. I just think I'd like to put in a bid to go into this portmanteau next time. I'm only 5'6". I think you could fit me in. I'm sure the customs would have no trouble.
That is the plan. Well, look, you've been listening to The Nowhere Office with me, Julia Hobsbawm.
And me, Stefan Stern.
We are your guides to everything to do with where the office thinking and doing is at. It's a fully connected production. Music by New Yorker Julian Brejon. Thank you for listening.